Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
An Erios production.
Menopause is coming and the men have all left town, but I'm not giving up until I see that baby crown. 39 and single, can someone help me out? He could be bald and bearded, short or tall, funny, smart, love basketball, from gay to straight, black to white, tiny eyes with an underbite. I just need sperm.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another week of Spermcast. You are going to love this episode. But before we get to it, let me just thank my latest subscribers, Allison M. and Brindis H. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but I did my best. Also, just in case I missed you last week, I want to say thank you to Sarah M. and Aaron L. We are now up to $1,044 and 304 patrons. Amazing. I can't thank you all enough. You are inspiring me to keep making this show. You are helping me pay my medical bills. I mean, it's an honor and a privilege. And I'm so hashtag fucking blessed to have you. If you're a listener and you haven't subscribed yet, you can go to patreon.com/spermcast and have access to all kinds of exclusive content, plus real-time updates when I have them. For instance, updates like what happens at my ultrasound on Thursday. Yeah, my ultrasound is on Thursday and I don't know what's gonna happen. I'm cautiously optimistic. I just have no idea. I'm not thinking about it too much. I'm trying not to think about it too much. As soon as I know what's up on Thursday, I'll let all of you know. Again, if you want to sign up for the Patreon, it's patreon.com/spermcast. That's not the only way you can support the show. If you want to support financially, you can just Venmo Molly-Hockey. You can also go and rate, review, and subscribe if you're a new listener. On Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, please go rate and review and help me reach new listeners. You can also share episodes with your friends or anybody that you think might be interested. Go for it. Do it. Help me out. Okay, let's move on to some updates. A lot of people keep asking me if I have any symptoms yet, and the answer is not really, except that I'm sleepy and out of breath, and I've looked it up. So as far as breathlessness goes, even though your baby isn't big enough to be putting pressure on your lungs, you may find it less easy to breathe, or you may be more aware that you need to take a deep breath. Yes, this is true for me. I'm out of breath walking up my back stairs or going on a walk around my neighborhood or just standing in my kitchen or pulling weeds in the backyard. In the first few weeks of pregnancy, a normal increase in the hormone progesterone causes you to breathe more often. This can look and feel like shortness of breath. This hormone expands your lung capacity, allowing your blood to carry large quantities of oxygen to your baby. But here's what's been bothering me about this, is that I have been on the same amount of progesterone since the end of June. The same amount every day, one injection in the morning, one vaginal suppository in the early afternoon, and another one late at night. So why would I only feel this shortness of breath starting a week ago? Well, progesterone is normally produced in the corpus luteum, which forms after you ovulate, and because I didn't ovulate, I have to take progesterone supplements, like I just told you. But I just read a few minutes ago, and now it's starting to make sense in my mind, that the placenta produces progesterone as well. So maybe I do have more progesterone in my system right now than I did last week because my placenta is growing, which is exciting, hopefully, fingers crossed. I'm also, like I said, a little bit tired. I wouldn't go so far as to say fatigued, but for the last 4 or 5 days, I've gotten really tired in the afternoons. Sometimes I let myself take a nap, which is so fun. I've been avoiding my What to Expect When You're Expecting book that I got last year when I was pregnant because I don't really want to know the size of my embryo or embryos right now. I don't want to get too attached. But I just cracked it and skipped to the symptoms section and read a little bit about fatigue. In your first trimester, you are manufacturing your baby's life support system, the placenta, a massive project that won't be completed until the end of the first trimester. Your body's hormone levels have increased significantly. You're producing more blood. Your heart rate is up. Your blood pressure is down. Your metabolism is burning energy over time, even when you're lying down. And you're using up more nutrients and water. It goes on to say that once the Herculean task of manufacturing the placenta is complete around the fourth month and your body has adjusted to the hormonal and emotional changes pregnancy brings, you'll feel a little peppier. Well, that is all very interesting and validating, so let's just hope everything goes well on Thursday. And now it's time to move on to our guest. She is a writer, a producer, a director, and the girl that I used to date.
First of all, I want to comment on this outfit. I'm going to take another picture of your outfit.
Oh, you like my outfit?
Yes.
Sorry, woman, the woman that I used to date.
When does this interview actually begin?
Whenever.
Okay.
Oh, she has a name, too. Her name is Sarah King.
These socks and these fantastic
penguins. Oh, they're not penguins. They're blue-footed boobies.
Oh, I love penguins. You know penguins mate for life?
Oh, I did know that. And these aren't penguins. They're blue-footed boobies.
I take it all back.
A couple kids started this company. When they found out that blue-footed boobies were going extinct, they made these socks and they donate all the profits to...
I love that.
They're on the Galapagos.
You're such a Virgo.
How does that make me a Virgo?
Do you know much about your sign?
Oh, just, I don't know that I'm an earthy and obsessive and perfectionist, but I'm not. I'm like a failed perfectionist.
You're not a failed perfectionist.
I'm a perfectionist for things that like are not important.
No, you things have attention. You me. Have attention to detail to things that you care about.
Exactly.
Which
That's why my house
about
is a mess.
And the environment and being a good, honest, like you value like your humanity and other people's humanity and like integrity and like treating the environment with respect. And these are things that fuel you.
That's so nice.
Well, it's a fact.
Oh, well, how does that, how does the sock thing make me a Virgo?
Because you were talking about the people that made the sock company, and it's all about saving an animal.
Oh, yeah, that's, and that's why I bought the socks.
Classic Virgo, yeah.
Because I try not to buy new clothes anymore.
I remember.
Oh, did I not? Did I do that back then, too?
Yes, you've never been a big clothes buyer.
That's nice.
I used to wear that shirt all the time. I loved that shirt. I remember. So, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's so funny. Oh, my God.
What's so funny?
I don't know.
Well, yeah, but that was a shirt when we were, you know, dating.
Yeah, what
as
do we
they
call
say.
That? We just call it dating.
Oh, is that what we call it?
I don't know. That's what I say.
I'm fine with that. I mean, that's what I say when I talk about you.
Yeah, we dated for a while.
We dated.
On and off for a year?
Yeah, I mean,
is that what
you know.
Would say? Mostly on?
I mean, well,
I
don't
so
know.
It was so confusing.
I know, it was confusing.
Well, one of the things that I want to talk about in this podcast, in this yes. episode, is uh-huh. this.
Great.
And then you have so many amazing other things that I want to talk about as well.
Okay.
So while this is juicy.
Yes. Yes.
Let's make sure we don't talk about it for too long.
We don't have to talk about it at all.
Oh, I like it.
Oh, okay. Well,
I think we should explore it a tiny bit.
Yeah. How long ago was that? It was like 4 years ago?
Let's see. I was 37. I had just turned 37.
You were on a
I'm
dating
app.
I'm
about to be 42.
Congratulations. You're not looking a day over 21.
Fuck.
We met on a dating app called Bumble, correct?
No, Hinge.
No.
Oh.
Maybe it was Hinge.
I think it was the only time I ever met anyone on Hinge.
I'm pretty sure it was Bumble.
Oh.
Maybe it was Hinge. I honestly don't remember, but it was a dating app nonetheless. And so I assumed that you were a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know of you. And then...
And we had like 1,000 mutual friends.
And then once I discovered that we had mutual friends, I asked a fellow friend who you love, Katie. Dotson.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, do you know this chick, Molly? Molly. She's like, Molly. I'm like, she does stuff at I.O. She's like, Molly Yockey? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, I didn't know she was into girls. And I was like, oh. But that was my track record, was like, I swear to God, a curious straight woman. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's like moth to a flame.
Yes.
And it wasn't intentional. It's people have asked me so many times, because I've had relationships with a few women that I've really obviously cared for that were not quote unquote lesbians or even bisexual. And they're like,
or had never been before.
Never been before. And they're like, is that your deal? So many people always ask me, is that your thing? I'm like, no. No, my thing is just to meet a nice woman. And in this city of LA where there's not one lesbian bar.
Yeah, what the hell is that about?
It's very telling of the second largest city in the United States that we don't have one lesbian bar. And then you look at West Hollywood and you look at all of the places that gay men have to go. It would be very helpful if in a city as big as us that we had more spaces for people to go where they could just walk in, you know, after work or whatever, and know that they were in a safe space of people just like them. And the fact that we don't have that is the reason why so many women have taken to online dating. And women's online dating experience is vastly different than men's, and especially queer women's, because there are so many women now that are coming out on online. If that makes any sense. I just went on a tangent. I don't even know what I'm talking about. Well, I assumed you were gay. My friend told me you
weren't.
Right. And then I was like, you know what? Because you just seemed so, like, you seemed so sweet and funny, and I was intrigued. And it's so hard to meet queer friends. It's so hard to meet people just in general in our world. And so I went ahead and went on the date, even though I knew that maybe you weren't actually at all experienced with women. And then, as you remember, I was, because of my anxiety, so nervous on our date.
I do remember.
I was sweating profusely. I was so hot.
And I was cool as a fucking cucumber.
Yeah, you were. Well, yeah. Of course you were.
And I was flirting like I've never flirted in my life. I was so confident.
Well, you were super confident.
I think I even tickled you or something. Yeah, I don't know what. Oh, I was trying to make you sweat more because it was so funny to me.
And you were so great about it. And I couldn't make eye contact. And I was sweating so much the sweat was dripping in my eyes. Do you remember this? My back was like soaking wet. And
I remember the back of your neck.
Oh, yeah. And you were so sweet and funny, and I was like, well, and again, like, obviously, you know, in hindsight, you can say, well, maybe not the best idea for an actual lesbian to try to pursue a relationship with someone who's not gay and has never dated a woman before. But I mean, you know, you were this like ray of sunshine, and you were just so sweet, and I loved that you were. I loved your work ethic, and I loved how you cared so much about. Like, I loved that you had opinions on the environment and how to treat your body and like all of these things. And I saw like a strength in you that at the time, you know, really pulled me to you. And so then we began a very interesting. Kissing friendship with a lot of snuggling.
We tried.
We gave it our all, Molly.
We gave it our all.
And I mean, I think what we saw in one another, I think we both really found.
I want to talk about this for a second.
Oh my God, I'm sorry. Yes. I'm sorry.
I
haven't talked to anybody other than my girlfriend in like months. So I'm just like, I can't shut up.
Don't lean too close to me.
Oh my God. We're absolutely far enough.
Okay. I forgot to tell the listeners that we're outside in my backyard because her headphones were clicking over Skype, and we're a good 10 feet apart. I think. Is this 10 feet?
Hopefully.
But we're not wearing masks. And so it's like, this is a little nerve wracking, but I think it's fine.
We're fine. I'm fine.
You're fine. No, but you just gave me a bunch of wonderful compliments, and I just want to say back to you that, you know, you came to me at a time when I was not feeling good about myself, that I had just come from a terrible relationship where, you know, this person didn't give me a compliment in 6 years. And I didn't have any self-confidence, and you came around And, you know, you would tell me that I was beautiful if I was wearing like baggy khakis and an old sweater, and you were taking pictures of me all the time. And I don't know, you just made me feel like better than I'd felt in years. You just, and you helped me build up my depleted self-worth. And I tried to be honest with you about everything.
Yeah.
So I do feel, I feel guilty. I have guilt around our relationship because I feel like that we were in this confusing relationship, whatever it was, for so long, and that I knew that I wasn't gay 3 weeks in. And we talked about it the whole time. It wasn't like, it wasn't like I didn't say anything, but I do feel like, I don't know, I just don't feel like that was right to you to let you stay with somebody then.
I disagree with you because you were upfront with me, and that's what I was trying to get at, is that I walked into this situation knowing that you were not a lesbian. I also knew that you were saying to me, like, I'm not, yes, we have a connection, but I don't think I could ever really be with a woman, and I'm attracted to men, and all of these things. And just as much as you say I was helping you to kind of feel good about yourself again, in many ways, you were doing the same thing for me. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I think we both found each other at a time in our lives when I really had lost my footing in terms of like my work and who I was creatively. Had I felt like a shell of myself. And I think I loved your work ethic. I loved I loved your discipline. And you know, you're hilarious, obviously. And so part of our dynamic, I think, like, well, I think we both understood that there was something that we were offering to one another that we weren't finding in someone else. And we were okay with knowing that it was kind of a stepping stone in our lives to something else.
That's really nice to hear.
That's how I really feel. I mean, I love spending time with you. Obviously.
Yeah, I love spending time with you, and I wished I was gay.
Right. And I at the time, you know, I obviously wished you were gay too, but then but like for me, our friendship, and this is really, I mean, this is I think really important to stress, our friendship as two women that were independent and really trying to find our voices as artists and wanting to, like, that's the thing. Like I had become so disillusioned with everything around me. Like it felt very, there was this blow after blow, awful boss who was sexually,
right,
you know, just verbally and emotionally abusive. I had had a failed relationship with a woman that I thought that I was going to at the time marry. And like, I just felt so lost as a person living in this city like Los Angeles. And I think that I was inspired by your mind and your focus and your integrity. And instead of knowing how to look to myself to get that for myself, I think I made it in ways looked at you for that instead of making myself figure out how to do it for me. Does that make any sense at all?
Yes. No, it makes sense. It makes sense.
And just as much as, like, I think you love the fact that I, you know, that you enjoyed...
Yeah, your compliments. Sorry, there's so many hornets. Right?
You're fine. They're not going to come after
you. Are they hornets when their bodies are detached like that? Is that what they're called?
I honestly don't know. But... Oh, my God. You're fine. They're not going to sting you. Oh, Molly. Oh, okay.
Oh, my God. I've never been so scared in my life.
Really? It's on your hat now.
No!
It is.
No!
It is.
What do I do?
Nothing. Don't freak out.
Do I take the hat off?
No, that's just, if
Where
you want, okay,
oh,
no, you're fine. Maybe take the hat off slowly and then throw it back. It's on the back of your hat. Okay, you got it. Perfect. There you go. That hat was fire, though.
Why did they suddenly come around?
I don't know, because I'm wearing, really yummy.
I don't see them
cologne
anymore. Do you see them anymore?
No.
I don't see them anymore.
No, they're gone. A friend of mine gave me this guy cologne.
Are you wearing a cologne?
Yes, and I'm obsessed with it.
toxins. That's what I think when I think cologne.
I think it's all natural, but thank you.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, I don't want you to, you have nothing to feel guilty about. You were always honest and upfront with me. I mean, listen, but let's be real. We were both extremely, I think, codependent.
Yes, absolutely. And I had never been in a relationship with somebody that treated me the way I usually treat everyone else.
Sure.
You know, it was sort of like looking in a mirror.
Sure.
And it was a little enlightening for me in relationships.
It was very enlightening for me as well. Yeah. I learned a lot from that time.
Yeah.
Because also you had introduced me to Al-Anon.
Oh.
During that time.
Oh.
And I had started going to Al-Anon meetings eventually. And is that okay to talk about?
You know, technically we're not supposed to, but I have mentioned it before on the podcast.
Well, I'm going to mention it because it really, for me, was a big eye-opener because I started to recognize some codependency patterns and behaviors that I had been doing my whole life.
Yeah.
And not to minimize our relationship.
Not at all.
But I recognized that I desperately wanted to, you know, treat you right and care for you. And like, I wanted to see your career flourish and I wanted to do all these things for you. But again, and this is nothing to do with you, this is everything to do with me. I recognized by the end of it, I was like, I didn't know how to take care of myself.
Yeah. Yeah. You weren't doing any of those things for yourself.
Nothing at all. And I hadn't been. I wasn't doing things for myself before you. And I especially didn't do it during that time because my main focus was I just desperately wanted to find someone that I clicked with that was a woman that I could love and that we could be happy together and make this like kind of creative situation with one another. But what ended up happening was I wasn't doing any work for myself, and also we weren't intimate really. We weren't really intimate. We were intimate like, you know, every now and again. But I kind of thought, well, maybe that's the best that is out there in the way of that. Maybe I can't find someone that I can be that wants to have sex with me, but I can have this emotional, spiritual connection with this person. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Instead of recognizing that we really are just wonderful, amazing friends, and we can obviously, you know, look outside of this dynamic, but also outside of other people to find happiness. And then, and recognizing that so much of like what we wanted depends on us finding how to do it for ourselves.
Yeah, so much. And that's how I was in every other previous relationship. And I had just started going to Al-Anon.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to Al-Anon, I was like, oh, I'm done doing anything for anyone ever again.
Right. Like some of the things that you were trying to do for yourself, like assert yourself and take care of yourself. I desperately wanted to do for myself, but I did not at the time know how to do it.
How interesting that when I became that person, I attracted somebody like you who, like that's a very typical codependent relationship. I turned into Dan and you turned into me.
I mean, well, I was already you before.
Right.
I think what you were trying to do is you were trying to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And I still didn't know how to do that for myself. So I was attracted to that aspect of you. I liked your independence. I liked that you were so focused on your career. And that's one of the things that I latched on to.
Yeah.
And then after our relationship, I entered into another dynamic with someone. And then basically after that was when I finally really, really started doing that kind of work about realizing just patterns of behavior that I had been doing since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Because that's how I was, as you know, like that's the family that I grew up in. And you grew up with some similar stuff. And I think we recognize that in one another.
This is very interesting.
But then, you know, through therapy, which is a wonderful thing, and through going to Al-Anon, I've always thought that if I found someone to love me, that all of the things that I had been putting off or that I wasn't fully working on would all of a sudden magically come together.
Yeah.
And I really desperately thought that. And then it hit me. Like it's like the bricks. And I was like, oh no, that is such a learned pattern of behavior and a way of thinking. And it's very female as well. Let me fall on the sword for you. Let me take care of you. Let me, to my detriment, let me give you everything because that's what love is. Love is self-sacrificing.
Yeah.
You know, not that love can't be that, but it has to be balanced.
Yeah. You're so well spoken about this, and I'm just sitting here going, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, don't, I can't think of anything smart to say back to you.
Well, I'm rambling like a mad woman.
No, but I'm so on board with what you're saying. You're just like, what? Anyway. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So I look at, when I look at you in the past, like, our time together was profound, I think, for both of us in different ways. I don't want to speak for you, but for me, I definitely, I look
for
back
sure.
with so much love and appreciation for even meeting you.
Yeah.
And for the lessons I learned during all of that.
Yeah.
And after.
I feel the same.
Did we tackle that?
No, we so did.
Great. Oh,
so good.
So
good.
Can I ask you a question?
Wait. Oh, sure.
What's going on with your belly?
I filled her in on everything you all already know, so we're going to skip this part.
Anyway, so yes, so when I first met you, I had just had my egg retrieval, and you told me something incredible. You told me that you donated your eggs to your sister,
mm-hmm.
and that she had two boys, and so that technically you are the biological mother of your nephews. Do you not say it like that? You're looking at me funny.
No, I'm not. No, I was just listening to you. So I donated my eggs to my sister, and then she gave birth to two boys, and they are now 12.
Oh, my goodness.
And we bonded over that because I'd gone through the hormones, did it. And then I think also what you were so sweet. I had one of the boys' names are Nicholas and Lucas, and Lucas ended up being diagnosed with cancer.
Mm-mm.
And it was neuroblastoma, and it was the prognosis was not good, and it was obviously awful.
Can you
awful.
Tell us what neuroblastoma is?
Well, sure. It's a cancer that is very common in young children, and it forms. I can look.
Oh,
it up.
I'll probably do a cutaway anyway.
Yeah, right.
Neuroblastoma. The term neuro refers to nerves, while blastoma refers to a cancer that affects immature or developing cells. Neuroblastomas are cancers that start in early nerve cells, called neuroblasts. These are cells of the sympathetic nervous system. Neuroblastoma happens when neuroblasts grow and divide out of control instead of developing into nerve cells. This type of cancer happens almost exclusively in infants and children and is slightly more common in boys than in girls. About 700 new cases of neuroblastoma are diagnosed each year in the United States. Neuroblastoma most commonly starts in the tissue of the adrenal glands, the triangular glands on top of the kidneys, that make hormones that control heart rate, blood pressure, and other important functions. In a few cases, the tendency to get this type of cancer can be passed down from a parent to a child, but most cases of neuroblastoma, 98%, are not inherited.
Yeah, right. But basically, it's very common in young children, and also, unfortunately, percentages of children born through IVF tend to have a little bit of a higher chance of developing cancers. And Lucas was diagnosed with neuroblastoma. It was wrapped around his kidney and et cetera. And they, I could look it up for you, but
I'll do the whole thing.
Well, here's the whole thing. When looking at the risk of childhood cancers and IVF, there are a lot of conflicting studies. Some studies conclude a higher risk of childhood cancer for children whose parents have undergone ART. Some studies show no significant increase at all. And all of the studies say that these results could be due not to IVF itself, but to the underlying factors related to the parent's infertility. Also, the demographic backgrounds of the patients, of the parents, are not controlled for in these studies. One thing they all agree on is that more research needs to be done, but that there appears to be no significant increased risk of cancer overall associated with fertility treatments, and the slim possibility of cancer should not steer patients away from seeking fertility treatments any more than it should convince them to avoid having children at all. There's your non-answer.
So he you know, had to go through all of the awfulness that comes with trying to fight cancer, and he beat it and is now a young, healthy 12-year-old boy. But that experience, I think you were so empathetic and lovely about it, which was another thing that I think drew me to you. And yeah, I mean, the boys are, it's amazing to see them, because...
Well, hold on before you tell me how they are now, which I'm so excited to hear about. Mm-hmm. Well, at that time, you ended up going back home to help take care of Nicholas, was basically home, right? And so your sister and husband were mostly at the hospital all the time. So you were spending a lot of time at home with Nicholas, right?
Yes.
And well, you were there for quite a while.
Yeah, well, I moved home and I stayed with my parents. At the time, I still wasn't out.
Oh my gosh.
Of the closet. My sister knew, obviously, and her husband, and that was a conversation that we had. I had said early on, because I volunteered, because she had a few miscarriages and then had tried artificial insemination, and it did not work. Mm-hmm. And so I was on the phone with her, and then I just basically said, I could try that. And she was like, yes, please. I had been thinking about it, but I didn't know how to ask you.
Oh my goodness.
So once she was so excited about it, it just clicked for me to, like, it seemed like the right thing to do, because I didn't know if I would ever have children with someone, and I wanted to help her, give her that gift. And I think that there was something that she and her husband loved about trying to kind of have some of our genes involved. And so we did it. But one of the conversations we had early on, I was like, listen, like, I'm eventually going to be out to mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, there's a chance that these children, one of them might be gay. It's a gene. Mm-hmm. And they also, I'm going to want them to know, because I'm going to want to be involved in their lives. And also for medical reasons down the road, mm-hmm. It's going to benefit them to know the truth. Mm-hmm. So we had all those conversations early on, but it really, honestly, it was kind of like, yeah, of course. And then we moved forward. Mm-hmm. And everything was great. It worked. When it happened, God, you know, tears, just thanking the stars and aliens above. And everything was wonderful. And then the call, that because Lucas had been having health problems mm-hmm. for a while. And then he was diagnosed. And it was just like, so I moved home. That was going on. And it was just, to be honest with you, a mind fuck, because no one knew. I wasn't supposed to be talking about it. And
right.
Your family knew. My mother and father knew, because they helped with the whole IVF.
Right.
And my dad is the one who gave me the final shot in my butt.
Oh my gosh.
No one knew. There was a lot of stress. But the point is that, so that happened and I was home, and yeah, it was weird because I honestly felt like, did I do something? I was like, how did this happen? You know, at the time. And it's interesting what families do that have been through trauma. I think we had, Lucas was diagnosed with cancer the same time that my brother had drowned.
Same age. So yeah,
I was a baby. So I don't remember him, but I remember obviously the aftermath of that. But that whole time period, I think everyone just went into like, absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
We have to unite and fight this and just whatever it takes to get this little boy through it.
Oh my God.
And my dad was. It made me fall in love with my father in a way that I hadn't been before, because mm-hmm. I saw my father's strength. He was there every day. Mm-hmm. He was there more than anyone else mm-hmm. at that hospital, playing with Lucas, reading to Lucas, just sitting with Lucas. And my mom and I would do a lot of caring for Nicholas mm-hmm. at the home, so that Carolyn and Christian, you know, some people, obviously, life can't stop. People have to work at times, and you have to have a rotating shift. And seeing kids with cancer really is, those kids fighting for their lives, they're so young, they have no idea what's going on. Aww. And then you have these poor families. So many families that go through children with cancer end up in divorce, because it's just, it's so awful day in and day out. And you want a reason. You want to blame something.
Yeah.
Was it the IVF? Was it the hormones? Mm-hmm. Is it because I have the gene? Which, of course, later on, years later, I found out that I do have the BRCA gene. So did my sister.
Does that have to do with the neuroblastoma, though?
Well, I mean, who's to say with all of this stuff? He's 50% my DNA. Mm-hmm. I have the gene. Then she also has the gene, and she carried the baby with Christian sperm. So,
planning for your next trip? elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, but her, that gene wouldn't be expressed unless Christian had it as well. And also, I don't think it's expressed in boys anyway.
The having...
Oh, God, I'm wrong. I don't know. BRCA's different.
No, we should look that up.
I will look it up. Yeah. I'll look into it. Wrong. Very wrong, Molly. So let's talk for a second really quickly about what BRCA is. I think we might have before, but I can't remember. So BRCA is actually an abbreviation for breast cancer or breast cancer gene, BR and CA. I had no idea. Anyway, BRCA does not cause breast cancer. Every human has the BRCA1 or BRCA2 gene. These genes produce tumor suppressor proteins that help to stop cancer. It's when either of these genes are mutated or altered, so it can't function correctly, that these genes may no longer be effective at helping to prevent certain kinds of cancers. Because of this, people with a certain BRCA gene mutation are more likely to develop breast and other cancers, more likely to develop cancer at a younger age, and more likely to have a recurrence of that cancer. It's estimated that 12% of women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in her lifetime. However, with the BRCA1 mutation, that percentage goes up to 55 to 65% before the age of 70. And for BRCA2, it goes up to 45%. With ovarian cancer, only about 1.3% of women in the general population will develop ovarian cancer sometime during their lives. But with BRCA1, there's a 44% chance. And with BRCA2, a 17% chance. Men with BRCA2 mutations and to a lesser extent BRCA1 mutations are also at increased risk of breast cancer and prostate cancer. Both men and women with harmful BRCA1 or BRCA2 mutations are at increased risk for pancreatic cancer. Now, is there a correlation between BRCA and childhood cancer? Well, I texted a pediatrician friend of mine and he said it's usually, and I quote, it's usually a spontaneous mutation and not typically genetic. 1% of cases may have some genetic predisposition, including BRCA gene mentioned. So, no, not really, end quote. Well, what does he mean, not really? If there's 1% of cases that may have a genetic predisposition when they have BRCA, so anyway, I looked at the link he sent me. There's one study, as far as I can tell, that examines genetic determinants of pediatric cancer. They basically studied the genomes of 1,000 neuroblastoma patients under 20 and compared them with another study called the Genome Project or something that also studied about 1,000 people who did not have cancer, as well as another study that studied 700 plus people who had autism. Mutations that were found to be harmful were actually identified in 8.5% of the neuroblastoma group, but only 1.1% of the Genome Project group and only 0.6% of the autism group. And here's where it gets interesting. The most commonly mutated genes in the affected patients were TP53 in 50 patients, APC in 6 patients, BRCA2 in 6 cases, and then a handful of other ones that were, you know, in 3 or 4 or 5 cases. So I think the answer is, for Sarah's case, is that even though only about 1% of neuroblastoma cases can be attributed to a genetic predisposition, it is possible that if Lucas inherited Sarah's BRCA2 gene, then he would be predisposed to neuroblastoma. But it's not likely? I just don't know. I don't know. I'm not completely understanding all of this, but I tried. I really tried, didn't I?
But Lucas is wonderful. He's taking growth hormones.
Okay, so that was so cute when back when we were hanging out and dating. He was like a foot shorter than his brother, and
right.
They were so cute. But they're fraternal, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really amazing because Nicholas is almost now as tall as me.
Oh my gosh.
He actually might be as tall as me now.
Mm-hmm.
And he is an absolute gentle giant.
Aww.
And he's so protective of his little brother.
Oh.
But he doesn't need to be, because Lucas is all fight. He's super tough. He's got a gruffy little voice and he's all boy. And they're so funny because they couldn't be more different, but they are so fiercely bonded from the experience that they went through. And they are each other's biggest fans, best friends. And Luke has been taking hormones and he's growing, and Nick is definitely still taller. I mean, it's remarkable to see all of that, and they know.
So I want to know how that happened.
It was something that we had discussed in the beginning, as I said earlier, but then...
Oh, sister, sorry.
I discussed it with my sister and her husband, but they started telling them around, I think when they were around 7 or 8, started having conversations about saying I was the special aunt.
Right.
And the last year or two, it's been a more adult, if you will, conversation about it. So they are aware that they came from my eggs. We have that bond, but it's still not something that has reached the point that I want it to reach, meaning I really want to have... I've been trying to keep a safe distance for many years, especially once Lucas started to really get better. And they were trying to normalize their life again.
Mm-hmm.
For everyone's best interest, I had to take a massive kind of step away for my own mental health, and also just for them to really kind of get their footing again. I mean, so much of his early childhood was in a hospital, and everyone was terrified for a long time that he might not make it. So that was going on for a long time. And then basically one day, her husband told me, he's like, they officially know. And I was like, oh, I kind of wanted to be there for that conversation.
Oh my gosh.
And he's like, we'll have it again. We'll do it again for sure. But you know, now they know, man. You're their special aunt. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so then, you know, I went home and saw them, and I was like thinking there was going to be this big parade. They were going to be so stoked to hang out with me and want to bond and get to know each other and see each other.
Right.
And they were like, hey, Aunt Sarah, good to see you. Pat on the back. And then they were out the door. Right. And I was like, that is how it's going to be. I mean, I'm not their mother.
Right.
I'm not their mother.
Right.
But listen, Molly, when I look at them, I mean, a man doesn't carry a baby and he sees himself in his child. I did not carry those boys, but they are 50% from my DNA. And when I look at them,
they look like you.
Lucas
looks exactly like
when
you.
When I look at them, I see myself in them. And we have so many similar mannerisms, so many weird personality quirks.
Oh my
gosh. You know, it's a mind F all the time, but in the best, most beautiful way.
Yeah.
We had a conversation last time I was home because my mom was diagnosed with cancer again. And so we were all home a lot again for that. And during that time period, we had some really good heart to hearts. And I said, I really want to be able to have time with them and me. Mm-hmm. Can we somehow make that happen? I want it to be where I can take them somewhere and it's just the three of us, or they can come to California and I can have a week with these young boys and really spend time with them, and we can really get to know each other separate from any other outside family distractions. So we're working on doing that, and that's hopefully going to happen soon.
Oh, cool. That's great. It's so interesting what you said about, you know, them sort of just brushing it off like it's not a big thing. And it's exactly how it should be. But how much that must sting for you. But thank goodness they're cool with it. I mean, it's good for them.
Well, and it's great to see how much they love their mom and dad so much. They're such a tight-knit family because of what they've been through. And it's really beautiful to see all of those things. Absolutely. But I definitely would be lying if I said I want to be able to have a slight influence. I want to be able to have conversations with them that I think are important for them at this stage in their life to have, that I don't necessarily know if they're having with anyone else.
Right.
And it's weird because I'm constantly obviously not wanting to upset my sister, really, you know, by asking for that. But I think.
And do you think it does upset her?
I think it has. There's been, it hasn't been a walk in the clouds, this whole thing, no.
Right.
There was a time where it was really difficult because there were things that were happening with Lucas after his treatment that made me really nervous for his health. And concerned, as
we've talked about.
And like, I love my sister, obviously, I so much, but there, it's difficult to see decisions being made that you don't agree with.
Right, right.
Well, because it matters to me. And it should be allowed to matter to me.
Yeah, of course. But it should, it can matter to you, but you have to, but I mean, don't you feel like you have to let go?
Absolutely. But, and I did let go.
Right.
I did let go.
Yeah.
And it was because I didn't care, obviously. Right. And it wasn't because I wasn't thinking about it all the time. It was because I recognized that I might do some things differently. I might have a different opinion, but at the end of the day, we made an agreement, and that agreement was they got what they wanted from me, and they have their children, and they're not my children. And I respect that.
To put a ribbon on that.
There is no way to put a ribbon on it.
No, but the ribbon on the convo about your nephews knowing and stuff. And I think it's really great that they know.
And yeah, I think it's wonderful.
So what do you think that people should do? When do you think people should tell their kids about donor egg or donor sperm?
You're asking me if someone goes through it, like when they should tell the offspring that they came from a donor?
I mean, I know you're not a family therapist.
Clearly I'm not.
Well, I think that the general consensus is tell them from the second they have ears, like start talking to them right away so it's part of their life. Do you feel like that is makes sense to you, having been through the experience?
What I think is that the more honest we are in general with everyone and everything, the better. So why start lying to your child early on if you want to raise children who tell the truth and want to, and that you want to trust you. There shouldn't be shame in it. So I think encouraging honest, real dialogue as soon as a child is able to start asking questions.
Yeah.
Obviously, when they're really young, it's a hard thing to be able to understand. I mean, we're both adults and we still don't fully understand how all of this works ourselves.
Right.
But I think that starting to have real conversations early on that are honest and heartfelt are the way to be.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Sarah, we are running low on time, but I want to talk about some of the creative work that you've been doing.
Okay.
Number one, you've been working on a documentary for a couple years.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that, please?
I can.
I've only seen the trailer that you made probably like a year ago, and it was so good.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes. So I'm now in post on a documentary about a family in Texas that have been married about 30 years. And the husband a few years ago in 2017 came out as being trans and transitioned into a woman and is now Danielle Joy Healy, DJ Healy, formerly Dave Healy. They are a very successful patent attorney, well known all throughout the U.S. as one of the top patent attorneys, has two beautiful children in their 20s, a beautiful, supportive, lovely wife, Becky Healy. And they came out and basically said, I've known since I was 4 that I was a woman. And Becky is staying in the marriage and says that they're still in love and they're trying to figure it out. And it's a story about what that kind of modern love looks like. And they're a unit and they're together. The daughters are supportive and they live in Sugarland, Texas. They actually live in the house that I grew up in, which is
what? What?
Yeah. They were my neighbors when I was a kid.
Oh my God.
They initially contacted me to direct a web series that they had written about the trans experience.
A scripted web series?
Yes.
Wow.
And very quickly I realized that there was a real story to be told. And so I asked them if they'd be willing to allow me to interview them. And then I would splice together this interview footage with their web series.
Mm.
And so we shot it and we did that. And they were on board right away. Mm. And we quickly realized that we should probably scratch the web series. Mm-hmm. I went to Texas and shot for like 8 days and got some footage together and submitted it. And we won a grant.
Amazing.
And then we shot more with that grant money. And I was in Texas during COVID and I shot them a little bit for COVID.
Amazing.
And shot the daughter had gone to a Black Lives Matter protest, and their daughter, Sarah, has a bunch of queer friends and a bunch of amazing people that are, she's such a life force and so supportive, and we got a lot of wonderful interviews with her. And then the other daughter has not agreed to be on camera and is probably not going to agree to be on camera, mm-hmm. but she's supportive in her own way, but she's more conservative. Mm-hmm. And so basically it's a story about a family figuring out how to just love one another for who everyone really is.
That's beautiful. Yeah, when do you think we might be able to see something?
Well, you can see something. At the end of August, I'm going to have something more shaped that I'm going to start showing people.
Cool.
But awesome. We're still waiting to see. I mean, there's just been so much going on with the political climate and what's...
Oh my God.
I'm not in a rush for this
right.
stuff, because there's been so many things that have happened in the last 3 years that seeing them find their footing, become more confident with everything and fight the battles. DJs does all this pro bono work to help trans people all over the U.S.
Beautiful.
And I've gotten to really know Becky, the wife, and Becky is just such, talk about a powerful woman. Yeah. She loves her partner and she doesn't consider herself a lesbian. But technically now they are in a lesbian relationship.
Yeah.
And talk about that idea of like the Southern woman standing by your man. Mm. I mean, she says, you know, whose business is it? Like, why do people care? I love who I love. We want to spend our lives together no matter what. And it's up to us to figure out what that means. But yeah. it's interesting because they live in Sugar Land, Texas. It's different when you're, there's not a lot of people like the Healy's in the world, but especially not in Sugar Land.
And what was this thing that some sort of screenwriting contest that you are a quarter finalist? I think that's pretty cool.
Oh, thanks. Well, that script has actually been advancing in a couple different contests.
Awesome.
It's an LGBTQ dramedy half hour. The thing about that script is for years and years, I wanted to try to make a show about people like me that isn't melodramatic, that doesn't end up with the woman ending up back with a man or killing herself because of this. There's so much tragedy rooted in lesbian storytelling.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of drama, mm-hmm. unnecessary drama. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of comedic, relatable storytelling for women like me or for the LGBTQ community at all.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the fact that they had to remake the L word is a very good example of where we're at. Why do we have to remake the L word? Why can't we make something new?
Right. And I'm surprised you're not watching it because you love the old one so much.
Well, I'll be clear. I loved that the L word was in existence. I didn't necessarily love the way a lot of the writing and direction went.
Yeah.
Again, we're talking about some really over the top melodramatic storytelling.
But back then there wasn't a lot of any representation.
There wasn't any.
Yeah.
So, which is great. And I appreciate the L word like a lot of lesbians and people in the community do. I appreciate it for what it was. Mm. That being said, it's 2020. We need some new things. And we need to be able to have funny, relatable, heartfelt storytelling for people, because the more we can do that, the more that it normalizes it for all of these people around the world that aren't living in our LA bubble or New York bubble, that aren't exposed to people like me or you. And the idea of someone like you dating someone like me, they don't get it. But our story is very common once you start to shed light on it and allow people to tell these stories.
Yeah.
And then it makes for more and more people to feel comfortable in their own skin. If I had a show like that when I was a little girl, it would have saved me years and years of, you know, really depressed, isolated times.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything to look to. Everyone was still closeted.
You wouldn't have joined a sorority.
I was in a sorority. That's right. I was in a sorority.
You wouldn't have worn all those dresses.
I wouldn't have worn dresses and had long French nails and dated boys.
French
I had
nails,
like French manicures. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I used to wear pearls and wear dresses and I joke about it, but that I was so terrified and so scared.
Yeah.
And I didn't start living my life until my late 20s.
Yeah.
And a lot of that story is very common. There are a lot of women who aren't exposed to what's out there and we don't know. And I was raised religious. There's a lot of people that are raised with such guilt and fear. Mm-hmm. And that's why exposure is so important.
Yeah.
That's why allowing people, all different types of people, to have these stories told by people who
experience them. Yeah.
So that, yes, it's entertaining, but also it's educational and it's life changing. It can save a life.
Yeah.
And it does. I mean, the reason why I got into writing and directing and producing was because that's what changed my life. Being exposed to, it sounds ridiculous to a lot of people, but the reality is, the first time I saw Angelina Jolie and Gia was, that's when I realized that I might be gay. Because every representation,
I gotta watch that.
Every representation I had seen of a quote unquote lesbian up until that point hated men, or it was highly problematic. They were super unstable and depressed with who they were, and all these love stories about this unrequited love.
Mm.
There was no positive representation, and not that Gia is positive, but Gia was, for lack of a better term, a lipstick lesbian who found this woman, and they fell in love. And the story is of this famous supermodel who was a lesbian. She struggled with her sexuality, and so she found comfort in drugs.
Oh,
she ended up dying. She contracted AIDS because of shared needles and died. Right. But think about that, Molly. When I was younger, that was what everyone was talking about as like our representation.
Right.
This sad woman who ends up, because of her sadness, ends up dying.
Yeah.
But that's why we need positive, beautiful stories for people to be able to have this exposure, because it changes people. It changes not only questioning kids, but it changes their parents. It changes their family.
Yeah. Right on. 100%. 100%. Dr. King.
Oh my God. I hate everything I said.
I love everything you said.
It's like I have been in a box. It's like I've been in my apartment, not talking to anyone. You're the first person I have not been talking to people, and I just vomited on your.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
No, you did not. I'm going to end this, but we're going to keep talking
God.
So that I can hear about
Will
your girlfriend.
Will you please just turn this off? I mean, oh my Lord.
No, my listeners are going to love this so much. I think you gave some very insightful
That I did at all, Molly.
Yes, you did.
I don't even know what I was talking about. I'm sitting here sweating. We're outside. I have the amount of tit sweat that I have happening right now.
Oh my God.
It is real. It is
real. You
know
what? I don't wear a bra anymore.
Good. I haven't worn one in I don't know how long.
I know. Girl, you never wore a bra.
I know. You're right.
And now
that's one of the
I'm
things
like,
you liked about me, huh?
I love tits. I want to put them in my mouth.
Oh, no, you don't. I wish you did, but you don't.
Well, they're pretty. They're
they are
pretty.
Beautiful,
yeah.
But it doesn't mean you want to put them in your mouth, and that's okay. And that's the whole point of this podcast is. It's okay that you don't want to put tits in your mouth.
That's it. That's all. And that's all I want to get across today.
Yeah.
That I am straight.
You're super straight. You don't want tits in your mouth, but you don't wear a bra anymore. And you know what? You don't need to. You have perfectly, you're very
tiny.
Tiny is not the word that I'm going to use. Very perky, healthy, beautiful breast.
Oh, thank you.
See?
Thank you so much.
See, men, take notice. That's how you give a woman a compliment.
Oh, hell yeah.
Right?
Men. Right? Straight up.
I don't even know. Can we please stop this
We're
now?
We're stopping now.
Thank God.
Okay, goodbye. Love you so much.
I love you so
thank
much.
Thank you so much for doing this. I hope it recorded.
Oh, God. I don't.
Well, that's my girl, Sarah King, everybody. If you want to know more about her documentary, or if you'd like to donate or anything of the sort, watch The Sizzle, you can go to OurDadDanielle.com. If you want to find Sarah on Instagram, it's SarSarKing, SarSarKing. If you want to find me on Instagram, it's at SpermCast. Same for Twitter and Facebook. If you want to email me, hit me up at spermcast@gmail.com. If you want to voicemail me, is that a thing? Or text me, it's 323-741-1818. If you want to join the Patreon, go to patreon.com/spermcast. And on Thursday, when I go for my ultrasound, you'll find out everything that I find out on Thursday. And I'm going to find out a lot, everybody. Oh, it's gonna be... I'm scared. My mom wants to FaceTime with me, what we talked about it, and I think I'm gonna actually just be there alone and, you know, record it with one hand, but pay attention with my face and my eyes and looking at the screen, and, yeah, and I'm hoping for good news. I'm hoping for good news, obviously. But anyway, all that will be up on the Patreon on Thursday. What else? You want to support the show with Venmo? Go ahead and Venmo Molly-Hockey if you're interested. And don't forget, I'm always doing those fertility consultations. If you want more information about that, just email me at spermcast@gmail.com. Don't forget, you got to rate, review. Oh my gosh. I just realized this might be my 100th episode. No, but I think it's next week. I'm going to go with next week. Oh my gosh. What's going to happen in next week's episode? Oh, in next week's episode, we're going to have an amazing guest. Her name is Allie Stroker. You might recognize her from Broadway. Hello. So, tune in. Allie is incredible. I think that's it for the show, everybody. Love you so much. I'll talk to you next week. Wish me luck. Keep me in your thoughts. Peace out. Mwah.
He could be bald and bearded, short or tall. Funny, smart, love basketball. From gay to straight, black to white. Tiny eyes with an underbite. I just need sperm. Spermcast.
An Earios production.
Powered by Acast.
Acast powers some of the world's best podcasts. Here's a show we recommend.
As the air gets cooler and the nights get longer, the team at Creepy is here to get you in the mood for Halloween with our fifth annual 31 Days of Horror. New episodes are posted every day to fill your days and nights with scares. With over 15 hours of free content being posted in October alone, you'll have more than enough nightmare fuel to get you to Halloween and beyond. Creepypastas, rituals, urban legends, and more. Sit back, relax, and tell yourself. They're only stories. They're only stories. Listen to Creepy on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now.
Acast recommends.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.